As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Dressed: The History of Fashion is a production of Dressed Media. With over 8 billion people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dressed: The History of Fashion, a podcast where we explore the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, April Callahan
and Cassidy Zachary. April, you and I were just talking before we jumped onto this episode that this is kind of the next chapter for Dressed. We mentioned it on Wednesday's episode, because Dressed listeners, you might not be aware, we have now switched to a Wednesday to Friday format. We have also switched to a full-time Dressed podcaster, April Callahan.
You guys don't know how excited I am to be devoted to Dressed and all of our future endeavors full time. Yeah, no, this is good. And you know, I'm not going to lie, it's a little bit scary. I kind of took the leap into the void. So yeah, sign up for my new class so I can pay my rent in New York City. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, of course, April's class, the first in a long line, I'm sure, of Great Designer Series, is online now, and that starts in April. And that will be kind of simultaneous with the end of my first class, What Women Wore to the Revolution, which has been so much fun, Dress listeners. I mean, especially because I do use the format where we can see each other. So you're really reminded of this worldwide community of fellow fashion and dress history lovers. And we are just having so much fun in that class. It's sure to be the same in April's class. And then we just have so many other class ideas up our sleeves for the rest of the year. Now that we have finished figuring out some business shenanigans.
Oh my God. You guys have no idea. So now that we are small business owners, we have encountered a whole new realm of things that we never had to deal with before. And I'm not going to lie, like, it was really stressful for Cass and I this week in terms of, being able to create content and go to 9,000 different business meetings. So
yes, but tax time. You guys are such a potent and always present reminder of why we do what we do. And you send us the sweetest messages, including Ruth, who sent us a poem that she wrote that I just kind of wanted to start today with. This is our first Fashion History Now, actually, of season 7, which is crazy how time flies and it's already March and already almost spring. But okay, so Ruth sent us this lovely poem. I'm going to read it to you, Dress listeners. And she just said, "Your podcast is a treasure, a delightful, magical dream. With each episode, my heart sings and soars as you unveil tales of fashion's rich lores. Oh, how I wish for a time machine's grace to wander through eras to every fashion place, to witness the glamour, the styles of the past, where dressing to impress was an art that would last. Your voices weave stories, bringing history to life in fabrics and stitches, blossoms and brims. Your passion thrives and comes alive. Thank you, dear ladies, for the magic you share. In each episode, I find myself ensnared." And she just said, with deepest gratitude, I extend my sincerest praise for the enchanting narratives you seem to effortlessly share. May your podcast allure never cease to beam as we traverse through fashion's whimsical stream. And she's a new listener and she takes us on our daily walks. Ruth, thank you so much. This literally made us both cry, by the way. So
yeah, I'm getting a little emotional right now. Just saying.
It is thank our you guys. Honor. Yes, it is our absolute honor. And it is you all are the gift to us to allow us to share this with you and share in this, like I said, worldwide community. So April, what do you have for us for our first Fashion History Now of season 7?
You know I'm obsessed with the future and you know I'm obsessed with the intersection of fashion and technology. So I'm going to deliver here today. I would like to pose the question for everyone right now. What is the future of fashion archiving? And I'm going to set this up in the context of Norma Kamali, who is a past dressed guest. She's 78 years old at this point. She's been in the business for 50 years. And very recently, it went public that she is actually training an AI to design in her legacy. What? So I'm not necessarily saying that the AI is going to replace humans within her business.
Right.
But what she's trying to do is feed the AI like what her design lexicon has been for the past 50 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So she has been working with her team of archivists at Norma Kamali, and they're working with a company called Maison Meta. And they have been putting in thousands and thousands and thousands of images of her past work through the AI so it can learn her design lexicon.
Interesting. And also terrifying at this all at the same time.
Oh, we're going to go there. Like, this is the main thing that I want to talk about today. But one of the cool things that some of these articles that we're talking about this said is like that her archivists have to put in the metadata, right? So the metadata for each of these images is, you know, like, what is the cut? What is the fabric? It's these keywords that when you search any database online, it's the trigger for the search term. Right. So this is something that her archivists at Norma Kamali are working on. Right now, they're starting with her swimwear and they've already done about 10,000 images.
Wow.
So I guess what I'm kind of saying is, you know, I don't think that this is ever going to replace the human element of this, but is us working as fashion archivists, is this moving us into this new zone? Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying it's really, really fascinating. And Norma says, she's like, the model will start to really be in the process of downloading my brain so that when I train other people here to follow what I've done, the legacy of the company can literally continue on and on. I have the advantage that because it's 56 years of content and there's only been one designer, it doesn't have different identities. And she means like that there were multiple designers.
Right.
It hasn't had that mix up. It's very exciting. It gives my company a very, really big value in a way that nobody would have thought of before.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting, right? Because one of the questions, and we've of course talked about this on Dressed all the time, is what designers do with these legacy houses and how it's never necessarily what you want it to be, right? And so she's basically taking care of that and saying, moving forward past my time, the AI will just use my designs to design based on my archive and my design aesthetic, something that an actual human has to grapple with, right? Doing in a way that satiates, you know, Norma Kamali fans or Schiaparelli fans or Dior or wherever you look at these heritage houses. So that is really interesting, but it also brings up a lot of issues and questions about cultural theft and property, right? Because, and intellectual property, because once design, we already know that the fashion industry has a huge issue, which is stealing people's designs. And that's already, we're already seeing that as a problem with AI art, where they're just going to go through the archive of fashion and pick all these elements to quote unquote design.
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm saying we're wandering into some new freaking territory that no one even saw 3 years ago was even coming at us. Well, maybe some people at Meta and whatnot did, but
right.
Yeah, it's here. So it's not that this is not without critics, of course. There are a couple different people quoted in this article saying Alice Bouliot, who's an executive recruiter for fashion industries. She was being critical of this whole concept, saying, quote, "The limitation of AI is that it can process data, but can it dream?" Right? Of course. So there is always going to still be this human element. But back to what you were saying about these legacy houses, this article, one of these articles that I read, I think it was the CNN article, somebody actually addressed this. He said a private equity firm or an investor who wants to buy that dormant brand and wants to reinvent it without paying a designer to go to and design the clothes, we can see them in the future of the brand from a design perspective without them actually having to go make the investment. So I don't know. I think this is interesting. I think there's a lot of problems. I think there's a lot of pitfalls. I think there's a lot of questions. But this was probably the most interesting fashion history news that I've read in quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable. Even just, and we've talked about this on the show too, just seeing the mass digitization. Because when I was in grad school in 2010, that was just starting. And now fast forward 12 years or, you know, 13 years, 14 years, like there is so much digitization of entire archives online. And now this is like that next step, right? So now you have all the data online. And now what is AI going to do with all of these online resources?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so, really interesting.
When I was in grad school, I just want to say there was no Vogue archive. There was no New York Times archive. There was nothing, friends. It was straight up flipping the pages. So here we go. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. And just on that note, that is something that I wanted to briefly mention to our listeners today. So I don't know. Many of you probably have realized that Vogue.com has really become behind a paywall. They want you to pay $1 a month for their online access. And I think that actually includes a subscription to their magazine. So it's not a bad deal. But get this. This is super exciting news. Not only does it include access to all of their current articles, it also includes access to the entire Vogue archive.
Mm-hmm.
So you two dress listeners can now go sleuthing through 1920s Vogue magazines page by page.
Yep.
This is like huge, huge, huge news. It used to be like $1,500 a year or $3,000 a year to access this. And now it's costing you $1 a month.
Yeah. And I have to say, because Cass and I can access some of these databases through like more academic platforms, whatever. But the way that they have organized the Vogue database when you do it through their public portal is really, really interesting because it doesn't just deliver you the hit on the article. When it gives you a hit, it's giving you the article, it's giving you the issue, but it's also giving you images related to it. The way that it searches is different than some of these other back-end databases like ProQuest or just straight up the Vogue archive when you're accessing it through an academic setting. So for any of our professional fashion historian listeners, check it out because it delivers the information in a different way that I actually find more helpful.
Yeah, and it's also visually more appealing, which is really nice. So head on over there. We'll put links, of course, to everything we talk about in our show notes. But head over to Vogue.com and happy fashion history exploring, dress listeners.
Okay, what else? Current events, Cass?
Current events. So
the Oscars? Are we going to talk about the Oscars?
Yes, exactly. That was what I wanted to talk about next because the Oscars were this past Sunday.
I didn't watch them, but I knew that you did, so.
Yes, I love the Oscars. It's always so fun. For me, it's kind of like an annual event to look forward to as someone who worked in the film industry. Just in general about the show, it's one of the most anticipated nights of the year, especially as we wait with bated breath to see what the audience is wearing. That's always the red carpet is always a highlight. And I really liked this year. I think they did a really good job. Jimmy Kimmel was the host. You had performances from people like Billie Eilish. You had performances from Ryan Gosling of I'm Just Ken.
Which was adorable.
Yeah. But of course, the highlights for me, and I'm sure many of our listeners, is waiting to see who wins Achievement and Best Costume Design. So that's what I wanted to talk about today is, of course, the nominees. And April, if you've seen these movies, please. I have not seen most of them. So Napoleon, Ridley Scott.
Haven't seen it yet. Not yet.
Costume design by Janti Yates and David Crossman. And of course, it's about Napoleon Bonaparte. So early 19th century fashion or fashion history, right? Being brought to the screen, including that super, super famous David painting where Napoleon is putting the crown on Empress Josephine's head. So she like recreated that with costume. Have not seen the movie, but epic achievement in costume design, I'm sure. Then, of course, fan favorite Barbie by Jacqueline Duran, costume design. Have you seen Barbie, April? I don't know if we've ever even talked about it, if we have.
Well, we did the four-part Barbie episode, and then I felt like maybe I need to give Barbie a minute. I've seen it multiple times at this point. Yeah, it's okay. Really great. Yeah. It's so smart and so clever and so fun and so sassy. I went with a guy friend of mine, and we looked at each other like multiple times because we saw it in the theater, and we were like, oh, damn, they went there.
Yeah, I need to watch it again. I think I had a lot of things circling in my brain. I think there's also some outdated feminist tropes in there that I was kind of surprised to see. But in general, in terms of being like a visual feast for the eye and exactly what I wanted it to be, it was everything. The costumes were spectacular. Then you go from Barbie, you know, there was that whole competition between Barbie and Oppenheimer because they opened on the same day and could not be any different. Right, in terms of Oppenheimer is about the man who created the atomic bomb in my home state of New Mexico. I will not be watching that.
No, thank you.
But what's really cool is that the costume designer is past dress guest Ellen Mirojnik.
I knew that though. That's great.
Yeah. So she got her first Oscar nomination for that film. I had so many friends who worked on that film. Of course, it's a period film. And I will not be watching it because that's not my jam, but it's supposed to be an excellent film. It did win Film of the Year as well. So congratulations to Ellen. And then Killers of the Flower Moon. Have you seen that, April?
I haven't seen it, but it's literally number one on my list to watch next.
So that film is, of course, directed by Martin Scorsese. Jacqueline West is the costume designer. I don't know if I'm going to see it. I can't watch, with the current state of our world, I can't watch movies like this. I don't know. I just can't. I need like escapism. But it's supposed to be excellent. It's a heartbreaking it's based on a true story. It's set in the 1920s about a series of murders of wealthy indigenous women from the Osage tribe. And it turns out that these like white American men are coming in and marrying these women, you know, acting like they love them, want to marry them just to gain access to their wealth. And then they're murdering them. So it's a really horrific story, but a very true history, very dark chapter in the United States of America. There are many, obviously. And it's just an interesting story, too, because the Osage were incredibly wealthy because they had oil on their lands, right? So I'm not sure if I will watch it, but it is incredibly important in terms of indigenous representation. So Lily Gladstone has been nominated for all of the awards. She's the first Native American woman nominated ever in the Best Actress category at the Oscars. She lost to Emma Stone, who we'll talk about in a minute, but she has won all the other awards like Best Actress at the Golden Globe, and she's brought all of these indigenous designers to the red carpet. So she's doing, you know, the whole circuit for the red carpet and award season. She's constantly displaying indigenous beadwork, indigenous fashion design. So that's been really special. And then also about the movie itself, Jacqueline West worked with an Osage dress consultant, Julie O'Keefe, to bring historical accuracy, but also just as important, cultural representation to the film production and to the creation of the clothing of the Osage women in the film and men. And so they really, really did their research, and they worked with indigenous artisans to bring these pieces to life. Christian Allaire, past dress guest, Vogue writer, has written multiple articles about Lily and the film and its importance. And he writes, "For once, an entire indigenous community was allowed to take their creative reins behind the scenes, a rarity in Hollywood, which has historically appropriated and stereotyped indigenous people, and then tell an accurate story through fashion instead." He wrote a really incredible article, and it really goes into the historical Osage fashion and what you're seeing on the screen. And that's just a piece of fashion history that we don't generally, as a wider population, know a lot about. So it's really cool to see that happening on the Hollywood screen in a way that it really hasn't before. So I will link to that article, and then we can end with a conversation about Poor Things, which I just watched yesterday. Costume designed by Holly Waddington. Holly Waddington won the Oscar for this film. I'm still processing this movie. I don't quite know what I think yet, but what I do know is that the costume design was insanely good. So just for our listeners who might not know, this is what I might call an art film. it takes a lot of artistic license with it's like kind of loosely based in the 1890s. Let's just say it's a journey of self-discovery. Basically, this man puts an infant's brain into a grown woman's body and she rapidly advances. And it's kind of like her journey to self-discovery, basically through sex. Basically,
in a lot of ways.
Yeah. It's kind of a soft porn. A little bit.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. We don't see like flesh. Yes, flesh. We do. Very rarely.
There is a lot very of flesh. Very rarely. There is a lot of naked body okay. parts.
Maybe our definitions of soft porn are different. Which was something that Dita and I were talking about on one of the past episodes. Yeah. Anyway, it's so good. And I just have to say, like, it was one of those moments when I watched this movie, kind of like the Margiela show for me, where I was like, yes, pure creativity. This is what we need to be doing. Let's stop just doing things over and over and over again.
Regurgitating.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's like, you guys know we're fashion historians. We love fashion history. We like to see our references to the past. That's beautiful. But when it's done in this way, like Galliano did it, or like she did in Poor Things, you know, it's these little tweaks, but it makes it something entirely new. And I guess the costumes for me were kind of like this blend of the 1890s. The reference is so obvious.
The giant Gigot sleeves.
Also, it's almost kind of like futuristic steampunk, but not in that cliche way. Mm-hmm. It's entirely something new. And I was just flabbergasted the entire movie. I wanted to wear every single thing.
Yeah, makes it incredibly appealing and also kind of fashion forward. And it's interesting, right? Because so Emma Stone plays this character, Bella Baxter. So she starts out as like an infant in a woman's body, and the costumes reflect that journey as she grows up. So she starts off, how would a toddler dress themselves, right? So it's very disheveled, like how's a toddler going to put their, you know, they might start put together at the top of the day, and then by the end of the day, pieces have come off. She never puts her in a corset. And then, you know, when she does dress up, it's kind of like, how would a toddler or how would a young child put these pieces together, right? And that's reflected. But I was listening to an interview with Holly Waddington on the Art of Costume podcast, and she was talking about the textures. And that was something that is so, so fabulous in her costumes. Emma's in particular are these textures. So there's like all this ribbing, which I'm sure was done by hand. So line after line after line to create this ribbed effect on her clothing. And then there's this puckered silk effect. And there's just
lots of chiffon. Yeah. So much chiffon. Light flounces, like sheerness, all of this put together. Super early on in the movie, too, I love the fact that when she was in that infant stage, they had wrapped around her waist something that maybe was like a soft bustle, but it looked like a quilted pillow. I don't know. The whole thing was magical. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And I would say just to watch it for the set and the costumes alone is worth it, because it's so inventive. It's so creative. Just be aware there are definitely adult themes happening.
Mainly the entire movie is one big adult theme.
Yes. One big adult theme. Journey to sexual self-discovery and finding herself in the process. But it is just an incredible feat. Congratulations, Holly. And thank you so much for that gift and into the art of costume. Absolutely.
Dress listeners, we're going to take a wee break for a word from our sponsors, but more from us just in a moment. Dress listeners, whatever your reason for wanting to learn a new language, whether it's an upcoming international adventure, communicating with your friends and family abroad, or even professional purposes, Rosetta Stone has got you covered.
As the trusted expert in language learning for 30 years now, you can join millions of Rosetta Stone users to learn any of the 25 languages offered. That includes Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, and so many more.
And this is fast language acquisition, friends. There are no English translations, so you learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. And right now, you can get lifetime access to all 25 of Rosetta Stone's language courses for 50% off. That's language learning for 25 languages for the rest of your life, which, Cass, is frankly amazing.
It is. And what are you waiting for, dress listeners? Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, dress listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Okay, Cass, we have been promising our listeners to release the details of our upcoming Paris trip for quite some time now.
This is not that moment.
Coming soon, coming soon. It's not that moment. It's coming very, very, very soon. But I did want to give you an update of something that we might be doing in Paris. And I don't know if this will be part of the trip formally in terms of our itinerary proper. But have you heard that the YSL launched a bookshop, Cass, in Paris?
I did not.
Ah, well, it might be because it's not called YSL or Saint Laurent in any way. It's actually called Babylon.
Oh.
And it is in the reference to the neighborhood that it is in, which is Sèvres Babylon, which we go by that subway stop quite frequently when we're there. But yeah, so they have kind of launched this bookshop, and it's not just a bookshop. They do have limited edition art books. They have out of print books, but the whole thing basically has been curated by Anthony Vaccarello to be his greatest loves, right? So that also includes sound. There's a whole department which is called Frequencies, which they describe as being the audio output of YSL, including podcasts. And they made like limited edition vinyls of all the music from different fashion shows.
Oh, fun.
There's also hard to find vinyl there that are like some of Anthony's favorite tracks. And it's also going to function as an event space, art gallery. And I have a bigger point here. It also has lifestyle goods, including home goods. And I was thinking about this and I was like, oh, that's cute. Maybe it's not on our formal itinerary in Paris, but I'm sure Cass and I one day will like wander over there to check it out. And then I realized that this blueprint is rooted in fashion history itself, right? So I'm talking about Poiret. He's bringing in all these other cultural touchstones and interests, including, you know, art and books and home goods, which is that model that Poiret set up, you know, in 1911 and 1913 when he founded Rosine and Martine and also started doing limited edition art books to promote his brand, which is essentially what this is. So I just thought it was really charming and cute when I had that realization, besides it being a destination that I'm sure we will visit in September.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, we're huge fans of books on the and bookshops on the podcast. And just a quick note for those who don't know, Anthony is the head, the creative director of Saint Laurent today.
Yes.
Because they don't call them designers anymore or head designers. He's the creative director. And then that also reminds me, April, that we actually got two Yves Saint Laurent books from Thames and Hudson the last couple of months that are sitting on my bookshelf. And so that is The World According to Yves Saint Laurent, which is a really fun series of books about different designers that just is quotes. So tons of quotes from Yves Saint Laurent.
Super helpful for your research too, friends, just saying.
Yes. And then also this new book called Sheer, Yves Saint Laurent, which is published to accompany the exhibition Yves Saint Laurent Transparence, presented at the Cité de la Dante et de la Mode and the Musée Yves Saint Laurent Paris. And it celebrates the couturier's masterful work in lace and other sheer fabrics, revealing how he was able to overturn codes of unveiling the body to present a new, powerful, and sensual feminine figure. And the cover is that really famous Yves Saint Laurent image, which I absolutely love, which is that woman in a turban from the back. And she has that like cut out in the back of her dress that's entirely lace. And so it's a really, really beautiful book, and we will link to that to our bookshop if you want to get your hands on a copy of either of those books.
And a fun note about that fashion photograph that you just referred to, it's actually a reference to a surrealist photograph from like 30 or 40 years earlier, a very famous one. But anyway, we digress.
Is it a reference to the Man Ray one?
Uh-huh.
Okay, the violin. So also in the news, my next topic, dress listeners, if you follow me on Art of Dress, then you've already probably seen my reels about this because I collaborated with Carrie Taylor Auctions and Cosprop London to promote their Lights Camera Auction, which just happened last week on March 5th. And this auction featured over 70 iconic costume treasures spanning 5 decades of cinema and TV. It was auctioned live by Carrie Taylor Auctions. And the costumes are all from the archive of award-winning costume designer and past dressed guest, John Bright's famed costume house, Cost Prop London, and were for sale to benefit his arts-based education charity, the Bright Foundation. So for those of you who don't know, some of the iconic pieces that you too could have purchased had you attended the auction, along with private collectors, museum curators, were things like Drew Barrymore's costume as Danielle in the film Ever After, A Cinderella Story, which is one of my all-time favorite movies, costume designed by Jenny Beaven, and I'm going to tell you what the costumes are, and then we'll maybe guess how much they went for, but you also had Gwyneth Paltrow's costume as Emma Woodhouse in the film Emma from 96. Keira Knightley's costume as Georgiana, Duchess of Devonshire in the film The Duchess.
I mean, which one, though? So good.
The blue suit.
I knew exactly and the muff. When you said it.
Yeah. Madonna's Christian Dior silk taffeta ball gown worn in the role of Eva Peron in the film Evita. Colin Firth's wet shirt costume, which is incredibly iconic if you're a Pride and Prejudice lover. Yeah, Pride it's so Prejudice. Funny because there really is a split between Pride and Prejudice lovers. Like, you either love the TV show or the movie, but apparently you can't love both. I love the movie, just saying. But people love that TV show.
I didn't even know there was a television show.
Yes. So this is from Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy in the 1995 Pride and Prejudice BBC series. So that entire costume, and then Johnny Depp's costume as Ichabod Crane in the film Sleepy Hollow. So these are just a few highlights. So April, would you like to take a guess, unless you already know, which sold for the most money?
I mean, I saw your reel, but I also wasn't paying like super close attention to like the numbers. I think I was like, oh, that's fun. Okay, so which one?
Madonna's Christian Dior, because it is a Christian Dior 50s ball gown, sold for £40,000 or $51,000.
I was going to guess $50,000.
Yeah.
Okay. But give me another one. I want to play.
Okay. How much do you think Colin Firth's wet shirt sold for? And costume. It's the whole costume.
Okay. Well, see, this is the thing, because I think this might be the most interesting, because there's almost like a fetishistic aspect to it. I'm gonna say 16,000.
You're not far. 20,000. And this is all before, because I know someone's gonna write us and correct me, this is all before there's an auction price that goes on top of it, so it's even more money than this. But this is how much the base price was.
The hammer price is what it sold for, right? But then there's also like buyer's fees, seller's fees. There's all like this back end stuff that you guys don't know about. I don't know if I've ever have I mentioned this on the show that I'm a certified fine and decorative art appraiser also. I don't know. Anyway, that's why I know that. Yeah. But hammer price. You're talking about hammer price.
Yes. And Drew Barrymore's costume as Danielle in the film Ever After. It's that beautiful costume when she's has her wings attached that Da Vinci built for her so she could fly.
I haven't seen it. But I'm going to say $9,000. I haven't seen it.
You have to watch it. It's £16,000. And everyone who knows this film, everyone in the comments was like, that is way too low. Gwyneth Paltrow's costume is Emma, $3,800. Keira Knightley's $6,000. And then Johnny Depp's costume actually is Ichabod Crane, went for £24,000 or $31,000. So that was a pretty iconic piece apparently as well. So yeah, and a lot of people in the comments of my reels are asking, like, I hope these went to museum collections. Carrie Taylor was in the comment section confirming that, you know, there were museums and different archives at the auction. So we just have to stay tuned, but hopefully we will get to see these exhibited so we can see them in person. I'm sure Fidem was in there, because Fidem, as we know, does their costume exhibitions every year, so we'll just have to wait and see. But it was really, really fun. And even just to imagine that you could own these pieces and have them in your own wardrobe was fun.
And fashion auctions, you guys, are amazing. They happen all the time, all around the world. Carrie Taylor's a great one in the UK. Augusta Auctions in the US. Well, Carrie Taylor is, they do a little bit more, but Augusta Auctions is like fashion textile specific. So just know that if you would like to attend or bid, a lot of times you can bid online with pre-approval, et cetera, et cetera. So it's there. It's there. It's there for you.
Absolutely. What else?
Well, I was going to say, you know what else is there for you? A few weeks ago, we did kind of an episode on the Margiela Artisanal Show 2024, where we broke down John Galliano's designs. And of course, a lot of you probably know that Pat McGrath reinvented makeup or pushed us again into new territory with her glass skin invention. And I just have a quick bit to say about this. But of course, because this happened, a proliferation of TikTok filters have now exploded into the world where you too can get glass skin for your next business meeting or, baby shower online event. I'm being silly here. Of course, you wouldn't do that for that, but they are very, very fun. And how I found out about this was Rose Callahan, the photographer who photographs a lot of our vintage community here in New York. She posted one and I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. So thank you, Rose. And check out the Margiela TikTok filters. Well, you still can, because apparently
you still can.
TikTok may be no longer in the United States. Homelessness, education, we're all starving. People need money, but TikTok, bad.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But we digress. Yes. And on that note, dress listeners, I think that does it for us today. Thank you for indulging us as we discuss what we are reading in the fashion history news this week and what we think you should too as well. So if you want to write to us and say hello, we do our best to answer emails. Be patient with us.
We're very remiss right now. We have to say, every time Cass and I have a meeting, we're like, oh my God, why don't you go into our emails for like an hour and do an hour of work and I'll do the same. And then, sorry, but guys.
We do read there. Each and every email you send us. So if we don't immediately respond or we don't respond, our apologies, but thank you for writing to us, and please continue to write to us and tell us about what you want to see from Dressed and what you love about Dressed. And you can do that at hello@dressedhistory.com. That is also our website where you can sign up for our classes. You can register for our newsletter, which we promise is coming soon, along with news about our fashion history tour of Paris. And of course, you can register for April's Met Friday night fashion history tours.
Yes. And right now we have tours available all the way through the end of May on Friday nights. I think there's maybe one date that is booked for like a private event in May. But yeah, come join. They're super fun. I'm doing one tomorrow. Yeah, it's great. We're having a good time there. Also, dress listeners, if you would prefer Instagram DMs to our email, you can always reach out to us at dressed_podcast, which is, of course, where we post images accompanying each week's episode. Dress listeners, just remember, episodes are no longer Tuesday and Thursday. Now they're Wednesday and Friday. And that is in the spirit of potentially at some point letting Cass and I have weekends.
We're not there yet, but we will be. Until Wednesday, dress listeners, have a wonderful rest of your week. Dress, the History of Fashion, is a production of Dressed Media.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.